Greetings, welcome, bienvenidos, hola, aloha, ni hao, namaste, konnichiwa, bonjour, buongiorno, saluti karup, guten tag, ja wivi va katbang, half a day, jai janendra, salam, shalom, peace. Now, go vegan. Peace how? Go vegan! From the left coast, the genetically mutated McNugget Pharmaceutical Vivisection Prison Kilitary Industrial Poor Nation, in the cheese-covered post-constitutional bankster bankrupt corruptocracy, democracy, criminocracy of the United Snakes of Listeria, foodborne in the NSA, NRA, USA, home of Uncle Salmonella, where they sure do eat a lot of dead animal body parts, and the Wall Street-backed corporate diet of death, disease, and destruction is shoved down your throat. This is Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden, and we've had about an hour of technical problems today getting the program together. We had hoped to have Professor David Nybert on this week's show, but he will be back with us next week. We appreciate his participation in our tests here, and now we seem to have things working. Professor Nybert will be speaking at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and his subject is From Genghis Khan to Wall Street, Oppression of Other Animals, War, and Capitalism. So that will be interesting. Register now at worldvegansummit.com. And Professor Nybert will join us next week when we don't have technical problems. All this time that we've been having the technical problem over the hour, I've been just looking for things to do. And we do have the first ever Vegan Because We Care walk starting the big event Friday at noon. We're going to walk from People's Park, historic People's Park in Berkeley, to the UC Berkeley campus for the World Vegan Summit and Expo. So we hope you will join us there. It's about a mile walk from People's Park. And the expo starts 10 o'clock Friday morning. And expo is free to the public. All of the speaking presentations are part of your registration. So please register now at worldvegansummit.com. And we're there Friday, July 29th, Saturday the 30th, and Sunday the 31st for an amazing three-day experience. And so I was just working on some of the chants, maybe. You know, I'm the chant dictator of the Vegan Because We Care walk. I was just wondering, just working on some stuff. We'll see how it works. Maybe we can improve it. Maybe you'll have some ideas. But I was thinking, for one chant as we go from People's Park to the UC Berkeley campus, something to the effect of, "We are vegan because we care. Don't use animals to eat or wear. We are vegan because we care about animals, the planet, peace, and children everywhere." Okay, all repeat after me. "We are vegan because we care. Don't use animals to eat or wear. We are vegan because we care about animals, the planet, peace, and children everywhere." And Ben, do you have the that Beatles song queued up by any chance? Or I have one more here, and maybe you could just play that right after I do this, and then we can talk to Professor Francione if all goes well. Yeah?
I do not have that song, but I can work on it right now.
Okay, so you can work on it right now. How long do you think it'll take so I can just, fill to get to that point?
A minute after.
A minute? Okay. All right. So with this minute, I want to thank the Stanford Inn for sponsorship of the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and go to stanfordinn.com. And it is the only only vegan eco-resort in America on the Mendocino Coast, Northern California. So we had Jeff and John a few weeks ago. You can listen to the archive program and how wonderful a place the Stanford Inn is with Raven's Restaurant, a vegan restaurant of great renown. So we'd like to thank the Stanford Inn for its support. Sponsoring event, you can go to worldvegansummit.com and you can become a sponsor or a vendor also. And of course, your business has to be 100% vegan to participate with us. I also like to thank Evolution Dog and Cat Food for its support of the World Vegan Summit and Expo. Daisy loves it. Daisy's been talking a little bit here, wanting you to come. She'll be at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and she wants to see you there. Daisy, my beautiful vegan chihuahua, who you can see her picture on my Facebook page. Which one? I don't know. Which one is it? Is it on Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden? Or one of the Bob Linden pages, I think it is, actually. So that's what's on Facebook. Also on Twitter, this is at Go Vegan Radio. And Daisy wants to see you there. She loves Evolution Vegan Dog and Cat Food. Eric Weissman will be speaking at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. He is the creator of Evolution Dog and Cat Food. And well, when you're in the Bay Area, I don't know if you have extra time, if you're gonna, you know, just be a bit of a tourist and head around the Bay Area. If you do make it to San Jose on your travels, maybe you'll make it to San Jose because you live near there. One of the best vegan restaurants in the world is in San Jose. It is the it's Vegetarian House, 100% vegan, organic, non-GMO. Check out the menu at vegetarianhouse.us. If you are in the Bay Area, Vegetarian House caters. And so if you have a business event coming up, a social event, you're getting married, you want the food to be great, get in touch with Vegetarian House. Or just head on over and enjoy lunch or dinner, 520 East Santa Clara Street in San Jose, 520 East Santa Clara Street, vegetarianhouse.us. And as I was saying, I'm the chant dictator for our walk, We Are Vegan Because We Care walk, the first ever from Historic People's Park to the campus of UC Berkeley, where we will be for 3 days. And as I mentioned, while we had the technical difficulties, I was working on some chants. You know, you have to multitask, you know. So as I mentioned, one that I had in mind is, "We are vegan because we care. Don't use animals to eat or wear. We are vegan because we care about animals, the planet, peace, and children everywhere." And then we're running an ad in the Daily Californian, the newspaper at UC Berkeley, and in the East Bay Express, that basically says, you know, you say you want a revolution, well, register for it at worldvegansummit.com. And then as we walk from Historic People's Park to the UC Berkeley campus, onto the Cal campus there, we will sing, "You say you want a revolution." And then our reaction will be, so after we say, "You say you want a revolution," then it'll be V-E-G-A-N. That spells revolution. V-E-G-A-N. That spells revolution. Let's spell it again. V-E-G-A-N. Join the revolution. Go vegan, my friend. So what do you think about that? Will we do that? There it is. "You say you want a revolution." V-E-G-A-N. That spells revolution. Let's spell it again. V-E-G-A-N. Join the revolution. Go vegan, my friend. We don't love to change the world. Go Vegan Radio with Bob Linden. Another one of our experimental programs with our new platform for delivering the show. Again, my apologies this week to Professor David Nybert for not being able to get things working to have him on the air. He will be with us next Sunday, 5:30 Pacific time. Again, his talk at the World Vegan Summit and Expo will be From Genghis Khan to Wall Street, Oppression of Other Animals, War, and Capitalism. So
he's going to do that in 45 minutes?
Right. Well, and these days, everything is Twitter speak, right? So he should be able to do it in 144 characters, right? Or something. So. The way things are these days. So we are being joined now by Professor Gary Francione and Professor Anna Charlton. And we got the Skype working for you, I think, right? You can hear me and I can hear you.
We can hear you beautifully.
We can hear you beautifully, Bob. This is the sound on this with this platform is so much better than the radio network.
Yep. When it works, it's great, but we spent a whole hour in technical problems today where I was just blabbing away, waiting to see if we could get a lot of it working. And it took us to now, but so here we are, this week's show. I didn't really get to talk a lot about anything I wanted to discuss, but that's fine. You know what... What amazed me this week was, I'm sure you saw Mercy for Animals with its undercover investigation of Eggland's Best. And what does it ask people to do? Sign a petition for Eggland's Best to go 100% cage free. So the $1 million donation is working that Mercy for Animals received from the Open Philanthropy Project. And again, it just it's amazing how I think that we have to protect the animals from the upcoming animal rights conference, and that was my intention to speak about that earlier, but we had technical problems, so I spoke about it just now. And how are you doing, Professors Francione and Charlton?
We're fine. Just peachy, Bob. Just peachy. This week has been very interesting because we've been posting a lot about the Yulin Dog Meat Festival, pointing out that there's really no difference between. I mean, animals are treated horribly in Yulin. They're treated horribly here. They're boiled alive in Yulin. They're boiled alive here. How many chickens go into the defeathering tank when they're alive? How many lobsters go into boiling pots? How many animals, how many cows and pigs have their hooves cut off and have their skin removed while they're still conscious because stunning doesn't work? But we have this idea that this is something that only evil Chinese people do. So we engage in racist, xenophobic, and ethnocentric nonsense and make ourselves feel better by saying it's all really humane here. It's amazing. I had comments posted on my Facebook page that were really indistinguishable from somebody posting on your Facebook page that, what, you mean Santa Claus doesn't exist? And I had people posting the most absurd things saying, well, it's worse in China because they're torturing the animals. And then you point out that they're torturing the animals here. And people just don't believe it. And, it's such a peculiar situation because... you know, I guess to some degree, they bought into this idea, peddled by groups like Mercy for Animals and everybody else, that there's a right way to do the wrong thing. And we generally do the wrong thing the right way, except, when there are undercover investigations that show that there are particular abuses. Otherwise, it's all going well. And this is really just sort of a direct consequence of having groups like Mercy for Animals and all of the other groups promoting the idea that the problem is abuses in these industries. And if we clean up the abuses, everything will be fine. So when somebody like me comes along and says, you know, there's no difference between what's going on in Yulin and what's going on, you know, down the street from you at the chicken packing plant, people say, well, what are you talking about? It's all fine. You know, we do it. We're not uncivilized like those Chinese people are. We're civilized. And where do they get this from? From these large groups. But it's unfortunate, but it's true, and we need to, you know, it's what we need to battle, and we're going to be doing that, I hope, a good part of the time at the World Vegan Summit. We'll be talking exactly about these sorts of things, and trying to educate people. But yeah, no, I mean, look, you know, the difference between you and me, Bob, is that you continue to be surprised by it. And I love that innocence, that innocent quality that you have, that you actually sort of, you're actually sort of aghast when Mercy Animals does something, or when Wayne Pissell says, "What? We have no problem with animal agriculture. We love farmers." And, you know, and you get all upset about these things, and I it's not that I like what these folks are doing. I think it's horrible, but it's what they do. It's what their business is. It's what their business has been forever, and now they've.
It's upsetting though that they portray themselves as animal advocates, and people go along with it. So Mercy for Animals, which just recently opposed cage-free egg production, and I'm sure all of their followers opposed it with them, suddenly reversed positions because it got $1 million donation, and now it's for cage-free egg production. And I'm hearing from people that, you know, again, I'm being divisive and I'm criticizing animal advocates. And I'm just looking at it from the perspective as, how are these groups considered animal advocates at all? I mean, HSUS comes out and says, we are the number one animal protection organization. And then it says, we believe that animals are ours to eat and use. And that's totally antithetical to anything that would be animal advocacy. So I'm always surprised that groups who are supposed to be animal advocates do what they do, and people who are supposed to be animal advocates follow them and accept it, and will accept all of their talks that will come up at the Animal Rights Conference. They're among, you know, HSUS and Mercy for Animals and the Humane League. They all have at least 13 presentations at this Animal Rights Conference, and I don't know how people aren't going there really to protest against them, against industry infiltration, which is really what it seems. And you know, every week there's something new and different that's more shocking, and people still follow them, and they tell me I should shut up and stop, you know, complaining about other activists. But you know, I want to be divisive, you know, I don't want to be included in that. And now the corruption is as open, you know, as Democrats stealing an election, these groups stealing an animal rights movement openly by getting $2.5 million in donations to promote something they all opposed theoretically in the past.
It is shocking to see a group change that quickly and in light of a grant that they got. I'm with you on that. That is shocking. But Gary and I were talking a little earlier about why some people think it's so strange and foreign to their experience to become vegan, that it seems to be, you know, that their whole life will change, they'll become a weird person, and they won't be able to relate to anybody or anything that they've related to before. But it does make you think how deep the fairy tale that we tell ourselves about the way we treat animals and our relationship to animals is. I mean, from very early in our lives, we're told this story that it's okay. And I'm sure we all have dissonance in our heads about when facts creep in and threaten to unseat that comfortable feeling that we've developed. And so people want to feel good about, people want to feel that they're doing the right thing. I'm sure very few people get up and rub their hands together in the morning and say, I'm going to be bad today. Most people want to do the right thing, but perhaps don't know how it fits as they are trying to pull themselves out of that fairy tale world of animals being happy with the way that we treat them. So I think we all want a victory. We all want something contained and attainable. That's why these campaigns have such appeal to people and are such good fundraisers. It's, you know, yes, I want to do that. Yes, and do it for me. And yes, I'll send my check for $15 or however I pay for it, and I'll be part of the team. Because heaven knows we couldn't do it ourselves, we need professionals, the corporations to do it for us. But It's a very complex thing to untangle. But you're right. Heaven knows we can't keep doing it the wrong way any longer. I mean, between us, how many years of experience have we had looking at this? It's not working. It's not getting better. Yes, there are more vegans, but if the money and the effort and the energy had been put into really getting at the core of the problem, all the other things would have fallen in line. Vegans don't go to circuses. Vegans don't go to SeaWorld. Vegans don't eat any eggs at all, obviously, so they don't, whether they're cage-free or not cage-free, that problem is solved. So we've obviously been going about it the wrong way. And it really is
tough. For me, each victory is a new vegan. You know, instead of Eggland going 100% cage-free, which isn't a victory at all, every time somebody goes vegan, that's a victory. That's a cause for celebration, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely, because there isn't time, an opportunity to dismantle things by these little single-issue campaigns. It does nothing. And then another problem will spring up, and heaven knows if we're still eating animal products with a burgeoning population, we're never going to make a dent, because there'll be increasingly awful ways that the food is produced to satisfy the demand. So we have to do something different, and not react to the gory picture or the sad picture or whatever we're being presented with by a group today.
Well, I mean, I think part of that is, though, that it's really important to, we're trying to shift the focus, shift the paradigm from treatment to use. You know, when we do advocacy, when we give presentations, we haven't used in years. I cannot remember the last time I used gory imagery in a presentation that I did, because we don't want people focused on treatment. We don't want them to think that the problem is the way they're treating animals, because then that leads right away to the idea that if we make it better, then the exploitation becomes acceptable. So we're always talking about the problem is use, not the problem is not treatment. And we've really got to sort of get people into thinking that the problem is that we're making animals suffer is a problem. It's a serious problem. But killing them, even if we treat them really well, bringing animals into existence for the purpose of killing them, for trivial purposes, has got to be sort of a big no-brainer if you take animals seriously. And what we really need to do is sort of get people thinking about this in a different way. And in certain respects, it's not all that difficult, because everybody out there, or most everybody out there, believes that it's wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering and death on animals. So if everybody believes that, but yet they continue to eat animals, for example, and use them in other ways. But the most important use that we make, the most numerically significant use of animals we make, is for food. So let's just focus on eating animals for a second. If everybody believes, as I maintain, that, and I believe that they do, that it's wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering and death on animals, and they continue to inflict suffering and death on animals, what conclusion can we come to? And the answer is simple. We come to the conclusion that they think it's necessary. So why do people believe it's necessary? And, you know, we're thinking about this because we're in the process of writing a book on abolitionist vegan advocacy. And there are basically three primary reasons why people, think that animal exploitation is necessary. The first reason is, despite the fact that it's 2016, and we have something called the internet available that's supposed to give us all this information, people are really uneducated about health issues, and they still think that if they don't eat, I am astounded by the number of people that I meet, people from all walks of life, all educational levels. It's not a question, it's not a question of people who don't have a lot of formal education, because you run into zillions of people who have tons of formal education who are completely ignorant about nutritional issues and who believe that they need animal products to be healthy. The number of people, Anna and I were talking about this earlier, the number of women we meet who sort of say, well, if I don't drink milk, I'm going to get osteoporosis. I mean, it's breathtaking, the level of lack of knowledge of people about nutritional issues. So one of the things we need to do is we really do need to make it clear to people as part of the moral argument. We need to, because if people believe, Bob, that it's necessary to eat animals, then the moral argument can't resonate. I mean, you know, if you come up to me and say, well, you know, you should do something, you're morally obligated to do something, which is going to kill you. Then you've now raised the stakes of about morality considerably. And you've now, you're now making me think about morality in a different way. You know, there is an idea that philosophers, you know, moral philosophers often say ought implies can. If you're going to tell somebody they ought to do something, it's got to be the case that they can do it. Well, once you start telling people that they ought to do things which are going to harm them, then you start running into problems with the idea that ought implies can. And I think that we really do need to educate better about the fact that animal products are not necessary for human health. That's one of the reasons why we did the How Do I Go Vegan website, because, you know, we were aware, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and we know what we get asked about. You know, we can give a presentation to a group of people, and one of the first things we get asked when we tell people that they have a moral obligation to go vegan is they say, well, but, you know, don't you have to have some animal protein? Just like I thought once, you know, many years ago, you know, I thought, well, you know, I've got to eat some animal protein. The answer is no, you don't. But I thought that. And so, you know, we're all uneducated when it comes to this, and we need to do a better job of educating people.
Well, and then we see studies that say animal protein is deadly, that the dairy protein is the number one carcinogen to which Americans are exposed. I mean, if we think about it, everything is kind of upside down, right side up, you know, I mean, so.
I mean, look, I always say to people, because I don't want to get involved in the discussion about whether or not the stuff is detrimental. I always say, look, the empirical evidence seems to indicate on a daily basis, more of it comes out, that animal products are bad for you. It's not only that you don't need them, they're bad for you. But you know what? You don't even have to go that far. What you have to do is convince them that they can be at least equally as healthy eating non-animal products than eating animal products. I always say it is my belief that if you eat a sound vegan diet, it will be, you know, obviously not iceberg lettuce and, you know, and water or whatever, but well, that's probably better for you than most of
it is. I think you get enough protein from iceberg lettuce, really.
So. I always tell them that I think that a sound vegan diet is, all evidence seems to say that it's better for you than a diet with animal products. But you know what? I don't even have to get you that far. All I need to do is to convince you that you're not going to lose anything by eating a vegan diet. Then the moral obligation, you know, starts becoming a real thing, because if you really believe it's wrong, and you see, Bob, I to the depths of my soul, I really do believe that most people believe that. Most people believe it's wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering and death on animals, and that if they thought it was really unnecessary, if I could get them to see that what they're doing is really no different from what Michael Vick did or what Andre Robinson did, or, you know, that there's no difference between, you know, that basically the sorts of cruelty cases that they're always reacting to, that they're basically no different from the people that they find morally objectionable, I believe a lot of people will change their behavior. It's just they see that they think the difference between Michael Vick and them is that they're doing it for health, they're doing it for nutritional reasons, they're doing it to get nourishment that they have to get, and that Michael Vick was doing something that he didn't have to do. And, I think we underestimate the level of nutritional knowledge of most people. It's stunning. It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. And as I say, it's nothing to do with lack of education, because I run into this in the university all the time. The number of times people say to me, well, don't you have to, if you don't eat meat, don't you have to eat eggs or something? And, you know, you say, well, gee, you know, where did you get your nutritional information from? And I guess in certain ways, the same place I got it from 35 years ago, because whatever the hell I was reading was making me believe that, you know, I wasn't reading very much of anything. I was watching too much television and having people like James Garner tell me that if I didn't eat animal products, I would not be manly or whatever.
Right. the beef commercials that he did, the beef commercials, and of course dairy, you know, milk, it does the body good, right? I mean,
you have to look for the studies that talk about the problem.
Oh, I think Ben is interrupting for a second here, so let me just see what Ben. Yeah. Oh, Gary, your mic, is it possible for you to turn your mic setting down a little bit? I don't know if that's...
Yes.
And no, my fan is not on. I am sweltering in the global warming heat so that we don't have the noise in the background. So no, my fan is not on.
Is this any better?
Is it any better now? I guess he tried to turn it down a little bit, so...
I tried to turn it down a little bit.
Okay, now you disappeared on me, Gary. So that might be down too much.
Okay. Can you not hear?
Okay.
I hear you, Ben. Does that seem better? Do you know?
Ben.
Now we can't hear Ben.
It's not terribly bad.
Okay. All right. So, okay. Sorry about that. We have our technical issues, so we were checking on them. So where were we? Were we somewhere?
Talking about the reasons why. People who believe that it's wrong to inflict unnecessary suffering on animals continue to inflict suffering on animals because they believe it's necessary. And we just talked about how the first reason, probably the most important reason, is because people believe that it's necessary for them to eat animal products because they will not have optimal health if they don't. A second reason why I think a lot of people believe it's necessary to eat animal products and why eating animal products is, they think, different from situations like Michael Vick engaging in dogfighting is because they think that it's natural in some way, that it's something we've been doing for a long time, that it's what human beings are designed to do. And so even if you can convince them that they're not going to harm their health, they think that there's something sort of cosmically wrong, that we're designed as animals, or whoever they think designed us, or whether they think it's a matter of evolution, but however we got here, we're here, we're designed to consume animal products. And again, I think it requires really very minimal education. I'm not suggesting that people need to become experts in anthropology any more than I'm suggesting that they need to become, you know, experts in nutrition. As a matter of fact, you shouldn't be giving information about nutrition out to people. What you should be doing is explaining to them the information that's publicly available that tells us that animal products are not necessary. Similarly, you know, the idea that animal products, that eating animal foods is somehow natural, flies in the face of nature. We have a long intestines. We have teeth, which are not suitable for ripping flesh from bones. We have a profile of our stomach acids, which make the digestion of animal foods more difficult than the digestion of plant foods. And so, if anything, it is the case that nature has designed us, as I say, however you want to interpret that, depending on what your beliefs are. But nature has designed us to not eat animal products. And I think we need to be able to discuss these things with people, because this is
one of the talks, and Friday afternoon it will be Dr. Milton Mills at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And he will do a talk on why humans are herbivores, not carnivores, not omnivores. And that's his discussion based on his scientific evidence, his research as a medical doctor. So, I mean, it's, I don't think too many carnivorous animals get heart attacks, you know. I don't think we have the fangs or the speed, you know, like to run after. You know, we're just so different from whom we would consider to be a carnivorous animal. And look at what it does to us. Dr. Esselstyn says that nobody has to get heart disease. Dr. Esselstyn is with the Cleveland Clinic. I don't think you could get more establishment than that. And he's come to the conclusion that nobody has to get heart disease. It's all related to what people eat. So I say, where's the morality of good parenting, you know, of looking into that and not, you know, putting our kids on the path to
heart disease and cancer, which everybody seems to get, and you know, doesn't seem to be as necessary as, you know, because look at the World Health Organization said hot dogs cause cancer, your processed meat cause cancer. Definitely, you know, that's they that's a declaratory statement, isn't it? So so I think it, you know, no parent wants to poison his or her children. I think if my mother had access to the information that's out there today, our whole family would have been vegan. But, you know, that's that we didn't know back then what we do know today.
Yeah, it is amazing. I was thinking, when I think as a child, you know, we ate things like hot dogs and, oh, God, it really is.
The most grotesque, I can't even tell you, you know, I mean, we had chicken fat on bread, you know, I mean, it's just, and that's not the most grotesque. It's all, but, you know, it all seems so gross to me to be consuming decomposing body parts and, you know, secretions of other animals. It's just, you know. Who thought that was appetizing to begin with? You know, you go down the road and you see cows and you go, oh, how cute, how adorable, how beautiful. You don't say, like, I'm hungry, right? You don't salivate, you know? So we are really,
I think there's
the wrong direction.
I think there's a third reason why people think that animal exploitation is necessary, and that is simply, when you talk to somebody who's not a vegan and you say you have a moral obligation to go vegan, they panic because they think it's so different from what they're doing. And one of the things that Anna and I always try to do is to sort of downplay it, because actually it ought to be downplayed. You know, when people say, oh, you know, it's overwhelming. You know, it's like any change in their lives, you know, whether it's, you know, I mean, human beings are animals who don't like a lot of disruption in their lives. So, you know, even if you want, you know, studies show that even if you want to move, even if you're looking forward to a move, moving house is an extraordinarily stressful time, and people get strokes and also heart attacks and whatnot. It's a very stressful time, even if you're looking forward to the move, because you're changing, you're affecting a fundamental change in your life. Similarly, with going vegan, you're changing your life, but in many respects, it's not nearly as profound a change as you might think. I mean, we always try to tell people, look, don't panic. You eat fruits, don't you? Yeah. You eat vegetables, huh? Yeah, love vegetables. How about grains? Love grains. You eat beans? Yeah. You like nuts? Yeah. Seeds? Oh, great. And so they say, fine. Then all you got to do is eat a little more of those things and cut out everything else. And it really ain't all that hard.
And that will bridge the gap until you find out what exactly you, what sort of cuisine will appeal to you as a vegan, and you become more proficient in stuff, and it gets more practiced and easy. Where am I going to get this stuff? It's so hard to plan. Well, every supermarket near you has a great big vegan section in it. It's called the produce section. So you can go and pick there. And then you can work out what combinations and what you want to eat for convenience and appetite and what appeals to your family and stuff. But
rice and potatoes and, you know, just...
If you're eating kind of maybe bland and not as interesting and varied for a while, you won't die. It's all right. As you say, the rice and the potatoes and the fruit and the stuff afterwards will get you there quite happily.
Yeah, I mean, and I think, again, you know, just as the animal groups have done a really terrifying job of convincing people that cage-free eggs represent the pinnacle of moral behavior, they've done an excellent job convincing people that going vegan is very difficult, and that, you know, you have to, you know, you need to prepare for it, and you need a mentor, and you need this, and you need that, and the answer is, come on. I mean, it's all your being a vegan is eating exactly what you're eating now, except more of it. And so, you know, if you like curries, you make a curry. You just don't put meat into it. You know, if you like, you know, whatever ethnic food you want, it has a vegan variation to it. So if you like Italian food, you just don't put meat in the sauce. If you, you know, whatever it is that you like. You know, I actually, more than Anna does, but I like a lot of raw stuff now. So I actually, you know, I actually don't cook a whole lot. But, you know, she likes cooked food more. But, it's really not difficult. You know, it really isn't difficult at all. And I think we, you know, so these are the things when we do talk about, you know, when I think advocates need to educate themselves. And, you know, you need to be able to deal with these sorts of issues. So when somebody's, because if you're trying to talk to somebody about going vegan and this person thinks that if they go vegan, they're going to die, you aren't going to get very far in that conversation. I mean, this is not rocket science. It's common sense. I mean, if somebody comes up to you and says, you know, the moral thing for you to do is to take strychnine, you're going to say, well, gee, you know, I'm not sure I can get into that particular moral obligation because it means my demise. And similarly, if the person you're talking to hears it that way, if the person thinks that way, and hears you saying you are morally obligated to do something which is going to harm you, and it may not kill you, but it's going to cause you to become weak and enfeebled and unable to, you know, have energy and blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, you've got to be able to deal with that. And you know, one of the things that, you know, we do is we have little cards that have the howdoigovegan.com website that we created with Sandra Cummings and Vincent Kahane and Mariana Gonzalez and Patricia Seldon and some other people. And what we do is we have a little card that, you know, we say, here, look at this. Here's a card. This doesn't cost you anything. Log on to this site. And you know, visit this site, and it'll tell you everything you need to know. It'll give you links to the medical organizations, and you can see what they say. It will give you information about B12. It'll give you information about protein. It'll give you all the information you need. And so you've got to be able to talk to people. You've got to be able to deal with things like when somebody says, well, but it's natural. You know, look at I love when people say to me, but look at our teeth. And I say, yeah, look at our teeth. They're like sheep teeth. You know, we can't rip flesh off of a bone. We can't eat flesh unless it's cooked, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when they say, well, but it's natural. No, it's not natural. And what does natural mean anyway? Well, you know, we've been doing it a long time. So what? We've been having wars for a long time. We've been engaging in sexism for a long time, doing all sorts of stuff for a long time. What difference does that make? You know, and then also deal with the fact that when somebody goes vegan, they're generally terrified about going vegan because they think it's a tremendous life change, and that's reinforced by all of these animal groups. So you've got to be able to get them calmed down and say, listen, this is nothing. You know, I mean, when somebody says to me, how am I going to learn what everything I need to know about veganism? And I say, look, you eat decomposing flesh, cow pus, and chicken ova. So you obviously aren't that concerned about your health, because if you were, you wouldn't be eating that stuff. But everything you need to learn about what you need and anything you need to get nutritional, you can do in 2 hours if you're a slow reader. And I tell them the same thing about, you know, about don't get overwhelmed. You want recipes? You want complicated ones? We got those. We got simple ones? You got those. You don't want Mexican ones? We got those. You want Indian ones? We got those. We got Italian ones? We got those. You know, it's easy.
You don't have to leave your culture behind necessarily, you know? I mean, it's like...
Exactly. You know, spices are everything. You know, you can, you know, spices are wonderful things. And all you need are a few basic spices, and you can create all sorts of wonderful stuff.
And we've loaded up the so many traditional dishes with meat recently. So many countries, so many cultures have had a predominantly vegetarian, I mean, as in vegetables, way of cooking. And meat was usually not available regularly. So this idea of having meat as the center and largest part of your plate is really a new thing. So there's so much Indian food, there's so much Italian food, there's so much Mexican food that's naturally, traditionally vegan.
Mm-hmm. And I like to point out today to people who are, you know, they want a revolution, they're anti-Wall Street, they're, you know, it's like, what represents Wall Street more than this corporate diet of death? You know, it's like,
we've been victims of propaganda, like, you know, so it's like, think a little bit. Think about who's talking you into eating decomposing corpse, cadavers. You're eating a cadaver. You're eating, you know, flesh and blood. Have you ever considered that? And that's on behalf of the prophets of Wall Street. You know, it's like everybody wants to bring Wall Street down. It's like, hey, go vegan if you want to have an effect on Wall Street.
We also have a medical system which operates. It's a system where people make money if you get sick. Well, got a system where people are making money if you get sick. You've got a perverse incentive. And what does that perverse incentive tell you? It tells you that everything that's going to be thrown at you is going to encourage you to become sick, because that's how people make money. I mean, you know, the gross domestic product of the United States measures people who are getting cancer treatment. So you know, I mean, it really is just appalling that, you know, we actually include in our gross domestic product the horrible things that people go through when they get cancer, because so much money is made off of that treatment. It generates a huge amount of money. And as our generation, Bob, our baby boomer generation, we're getting old now. Now, we'll live forever because we're vegans, but we are getting older. And you know, I mean, it starts happening now where, you know, I don't know about you, but, you know, people I went to college with, people I went to high school with, not a lot of them, thank goodness, but a lot, you know, but people are beginning to pass away. And you say, well, you know, wow. And there's a zillion of us. We're going to bankrupt the system completely.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're going to destroy.
Absolutely.
We're going
into retirement with diabetes,
right,
high blood pressure and heart disease, and the dementia that comes, that some of it is diet associated.
Our generation is going to destroy,
yeah,
the healthcare system. It's going to bankrupt it. And completely unnecessarily. The only reason we're doing it is because we're, you know, as Anna says, we're going into our old age, as it were, with all sorts of maladies that we don't need to have because we've given them to ourselves. But, you know, but in any event, the moral imperative is veganism, but the point that we're trying to make tonight is that the moral imperative really doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense if you can't make it practically effective and practically attractive to people. People can't believe you're telling them, you know, they can't accept the morality of something that they think is harmful. So you need to explain to them it's not harmful. You need to explain to them that it is natural, that if there's anything that's not natural, it's, you know, that they're eating decomposing flesh. I always say to you, one of the first things I say to people is, where do you keep meat? Keep it in the refrigerator. Why do you keep it in the refrigerator? Well, because it'll go off. Exactly. The same reason why when you die, the coroner or the funeral parlor sticks you in a refrigerator. Why? Because you will rot. Same thing happens with meat. Meat is decomposing flesh. You are eating decomposing flesh with all of the
pathogen-covered decomposing flesh.
Exactly. But,
no appetizing. Well, put a little ketchup on anything, right?
So, exactly. Exactly.
So it's covered with poop also. You know, people, you know, it's like, you know, E. coli, and they can't keep the poop off the meat. It's like so appetizing, isn't it? Ugh.
But we're supposed to be countering the message that so many of the big groups have been putting out, that it's so hard, and we understand why you can't do it, and a little at a time is enough, and baby steps, and all that sort of stuff. I mean, no, I think we've got to be encouraging people just to go headfirst into this, that it's good for them, that it could be fun, that it's healthy, and there's just no downside.
There is no downside, and its effect... You know, it affects so, you know, I thought it was a quiet little personal decision that I was making long ago. I'd sit in a corner, maybe eat a salad and not explain myself to anyone. And then I see how the implications, you know, it's about everything. It's about everything. Like you said, we're going to bankrupt, you know, we're talking about single payer and you know, healthcare for all. And, you know, but what's bankrupting the system? As you said, it's the consumption of meat, dairy, fish and eggs that brings bankruptcy to people. It's, you know, one of the causes people lose their homes so much is that very same, you know,
yep.
I mean, you know, losing the home because of the medical problems, which are we're told now are totally unnecessary. You know, we've but look, you know, the indoctrination started at a young age for me in elementary school. Every day they gave me a container of cow's milk every day with cookies, you know. So it's like,
yeah, I mean, you know, Bob, you and I grew up thinking, and Anna too, I guess, in Britain, I guess it was the same sort of thing. Who would have thought milk was a bad food? Everybody thought milk was a really wholesome food. Now I look at it and say, God, you know, I can't believe
look at it. I mean, what it's full of, you know, tuberculosis, leukemia, pus, blood, you know. It's like, but they did say it was nature's most perfect food, right? Or nature's perfect food is what.
No. There's no doubt about it. I mean, it was, but you know, look, I think the thing is that
for a baby cow, it's nature's perfect food.
Exactly. We've got our work cut out for us. But I think that, you know, that it is imperative that we understand that those people who aren't vegans see a very, very different world. And I do think a lot of them really do believe that they're going to die or they're going to compromise their health if they're not vegan. We need to explain that. We need to explain that there's nothing to this argument about it being natural to consume animal products. And we need to really work on the fact, you know, we need to undo, just like we've got to undo what the large groups have done in terms of promote this idea of happy exploitation. We've got to undo the nonsense that groups like, you know, Vegan Outreach and Humane League and all of these groups promote the idea that veganism is a difficult thing. You know, it's the gold standard, but it's so difficult to achieve. Nonsense. It's extraordinarily easy. And we're going
to
talk...
How natural is it if everybody had to kill, you know, an animal for him or herself? I think people wouldn't think it's so natural. They, you know, they wouldn't be able to do it. They have to pay somebody behind, you know, closed doors, closed windows, you know, to do it. How natural is it? We don't have a killer instinct. We'd want to save the animals, really, if we allowed our instincts to take hold.
Not to have all of the commercials and to have to sort of wrap it up at 9:52 or 9:56. Is it 9:52 or 9:56? I forgot when the death knell came. You know, when you say it affects everything, look, the reality is you can't talk about nonviolence and you can't talk about these high ethical ideas as long as you're sticking death in your mouth three times a day. Once you stop doing that, your perspective changes.
I think there was a little we lost you for a second there. You said if you want to talk about nonviolence.
Yes, if you want to talk, can you hear me now?
I hear you. Yeah.
Okay. If you want to talk about you can't talk about nonviolence as long as you're sticking violence into your mouth three times a day, and that once you stop doing that for moral reasons, it changes your perspective on everything.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So. And the thing is, I mean, people might think it's hard, you know, it's not hard. And plus, you know, when I did it, it was such a relief, you know, it was like I couldn't participate in the violence anymore. So I felt so much better, like, you know, I could sleep at night, you know, it's, you know, because how can people really ignore that they are participating in violence? I mean, doesn't that thought come to everybody's mind? You know, you're chewing on someone's body. Did you ever think about that? You know, and it's like,
yeah, but again I think it goes to the problem that most people think it's a necessary evil. They think, well, you know, I've got to eat animals, and if I don't eat animals, I'm going to get sick, or I'm going to be weak, or I'm not going to have, you know, I'm not going to have the vitality that I will have if I die. I hear this all the time from people. You know, and I mean, the level of, but again, as you point out, you know, they've got us brainwashed, and we are. I mean, you know, we've watched television, we've read garbage in newspapers, and, you know, we have a whole nation of people. As I said a little while ago, the number of women I talk to who say, geez, I'd love to be vegan, but osteoporosis runs in my family. And the answer is, yeah, keep eating animal products, and it'll continue to run in your family.
Sure.
Intelligent women. So what this tells us is that
we'll go to the hospital cafeteria and see what the doctors are eating, right?
Well, exactly. I mean it is, I think it is astounding that McDonald's has restaurants in hospitals.
I think that's where they belong, though. So you don't need an ambulance, just an elevator.
Exactly. But I mean, it is shocking.
They just closed the McDonald's at the Cleveland Clinic. The number one heart specialist.
Yeah,
clinic. You know, and a McDonald's was in the Cleveland Clinic.
It's shocking. It's absolutely shocking. And you know, it's like having a bar in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting place. I mean, who would?
A few years ago, the owner of a Southern California station that carried my radio show had he heard me interviewed on a show on his radio station, and it kind of connected with him. Actually, he was from a cattle raising family, and as a child there was something that upset him about one of the cows going up on a truck and then looking back at him, and it was something that really affected him forever, and he brought that up, and he wanted to carry the show some years ago. This was Fred Lundgren at KCAA, and so in the course of arranging for him to carry the show, I'd call him, and I called him one day, and I said, you know, how are you doing, Fred? And he said, well, not too well. You don't know this about me, but I'm close to 400 pounds, and the doctors are really just giving me really weeks to live, and nobody will operate on me. And, you know, so I said, well, Fred, I don't know. You know, I don't know if this is your lucky day that I'm in front of you, because the only advice I ever give to anyone is to go vegan. I did say, you know, you don't have to listen to my way of going vegan. Let me refer you to Dr. Esselstyn. And so Fred was desperate enough to take my advice. He was close to 400 pounds. Then suddenly he's at 280 and he's exercising. And he went back to see his cardiologist. And the cardiologist said, you know, what did you do? And he said, well, I went vegan. The cardiologist said, don't tell any of my other patients.
Yeah.
And he's still alive today, years later, after he was only given, you know, weeks or a few months to live. He's still alive, and it worked for him even at that critical point, oddly enough. You know?
Oh, yeah. No, actually, I think there have been some studies which show that people who are really, really sick can make almost miraculous recoveries in a fairly short period of time if they stop eating that garbage, that their body reacts strongly and positively.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So we have the key to everything here, and I guess we'll look at all aspects of going vegan at the World Vegan Summit and Expo, and just encourage everybody to do the right thing, and they won't be harming themselves. They'll be doing themselves some good, really. So
absolutely, well, we're looking forward to the World Vegan Summit, and I think it's going to be terrific. We're both looking forward to it, as are all of the people coming from all over the world who are going to talk about abolitionist vegan advocacy. We're all really looking forward to it.
Terrific. Okay. Well, we will see you there, and we will talk again next week. I guess we're out of time here, whatever that means in our new format. So
maybe we should just have a 24-hour. We could have a
24 hours. Right. We could do. Yeah. We'll. Right. We'll filibuster.
And Ben can figure out how to get phone people to call, and we can have a conversation with people all over the world, 24 hours a day, about veganism.
That would be great. And if we could figure out how I can turn my fan on while we're doing it, that would be a miracle that I need right now. It's so hot here.
Don't talk to us about hot weather. It's like a swamp on the East Coast right now. It really is. It's just dreadful. It's absolutely dreadful. But anyway, all right. Well, then okay. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for being with us.
And Ben.
Thank you, Professor Francione. Thank you, Anna Charlton. And we will see you at the World Vegan Summit and Expo. And I thank everyone for listening and tolerating our technical problems. But, you know, there's no business like vegan show business, and the show must go on. So thanks for listening. Now go to your computer and register at worldvegansummit.com.
Thank you.